Public Broadcasting.
And you're listening to WMNF Tampa, Sarasota Clearwater, Community Conscious Radio. Hi, I'm Mary Glennie.
And I'm Arlene Englehart. And you are listening to From a Woman's Point of View. We want to say a big thank you to all of you that contributed to WMNF during the fund drive and over the last two Thursdays that we were doing our part. We also thank you so much for helping us reach our goal. And I also want to say, what can you do in 10 minutes that can make a difference to your community? How about donating your car, boat, or motorcycle to WMNF? We'll pick up your vehicle, running or not, and you get a tax receipt. Free towing as well. Just call 1-888-966-3885. That's 1-888-968-3885. And thanks.
Well,
and a big day ahead, Mary, and it's been a pretty horrendous week, really.
Well, you know, I often find that I'm standing here right now, and I don't even know what my emotions are, to tell you the truth. I was listening to Amy Goodman. We're all still very much thinking about Parkland and the incredible articulation and the valor and the anger of the students, their parents, etc., but also what's happening with Syria. But I know, I can't help myself, the Olympics, I know how hard these athletes have worked for most of their lives, and I really have to give a shout out to the women's hockey team and their incredible victory last night or early this morning. I couldn't resist. I was watching it. That shootout was amazing. Both teams deserved to win, but the United States won. And also, I have to give another shout out to the cross country ski team, the relay, to Jesse Diggins and Nancy Caitlin. Kathy Caitlin. What an amazing accomplishment for American cross country skiers. So something to be really positive about. But first, we're going to be talking to Nancy Hogshead Maker because we're going to be following up. And in other words, on our minds right now, I think, are the youth, the young people, the children of this country. And, you know, right before we went into marathon, we were following very much what was happening with the gymnasts. But there was also a very important legislation that just got signed, and just actually February 15th, just last week. And Nancy Hogshead Maker was a very big part of that. The Safety Sports Act for young people and making mandatory reporting of sexual abuse, etc. And so she'll be bringing us up to date on that. And then, of course, the horrible Parkland shootings. We'll be talking to Mike Malleys, and he actually is a senior researcher for the Center for Juvenile and Criminal Justice. And he's going to be pointing out some things about gun violence that I think will be interesting for us to consider. But anyway, I'm going to put this music on by Cheryl Wheeler, because if it were up to me...
Maybe it's the real crooks, maybe it's the drugs, maybe it's the parents, maybe it's the colors everybody's wearing. Maybe it's the president, maybe it's the last one, maybe it's the one before that, what he done. Maybe it's the high schools, maybe it's the teachers, maybe it's the tattooed children in the bleachers. Maybe it's the Bible, maybe it's the lack, maybe it's the music, maybe it's the crack. Maybe it's the hairdos, maybe it's the TV, maybe it's the cigarettes, maybe it's the family, maybe it's the fast food, maybe it's the news, maybe it's divorce, maybe it's abuse, maybe it's the lawyers, maybe it's the prisons, maybe it's the senators, maybe it's the system, maybe it's the fathers, maybe it's the sons, maybe it's the sisters, maybe it's the moms, maybe it's the radio, maybe it's road rage, maybe El Nino, where you feed raised, maybe it's the army, maybe it's the liquor, maybe it's the papers, maybe the militia, maybe it's the athletes, maybe it's the ads, maybe it's the sports fans, maybe it's a fad, maybe it's the magazines, maybe it's the internet, maybe it's the lottery, maybe it's the immigrants, maybe it's taxes, big business, maybe it's the KKK and the skinheads, maybe it's the communists, maybe it's the Catholics, maybe it's the hippies, maybe it's the addicts, maybe it's the art, maybe it's the sex, maybe it's the homeless, maybe it's the banks, maybe it's the clear cut, maybe it's the ozone, maybe it's the chemicals, maybe it's the car phone, maybe it's the fertilizer, maybe it's the nose rings, maybe it's with the guns.
Oh, indeed. If it were up to me, I would take away the guns. That great song by Cheryl Wheeler. Slightly a different subject, even though I know how much Nancy Hogshead Maker, who was with us on the phone, has worked tirelessly to actually protect children and young people in so many ways. What we're going to be talking about her today is actually an act that probably with everything that's been happening, you didn't even notice. Just last week, February 15th, was signed into law, the Safe Sports Act. So Nancy Hogshead Maker, a very famous, actually, Olympic athlete here in Florida, champion swimmer. I believe she won 3 golds and a silver in the 1984 Olympics, and has gone on, is a brilliant attorney, and has been a tireless advocate, particularly for young women in sports, but also young athletes, period. So we've been lucky enough to have this woman on the show before. So Nancy Hogshead Maker, welcome so much back to the show.
Oh, Mary, it's a privilege, and thank you for that lovely introduction. I appreciate it.
Well, you deserve it, because I remember, I don't know, it was about 5 years ago we were talking, and you were bringing attention, actually, to the sexual abuse in swimming, and with the coaches, et cetera, and also you said that, you know, you were quite sure it was in other sports, including gymnastics, et cetera. So you have been aware of this problem, actually, for several years.
Oh, I've been trying to address it for about 8 years now. So, you know, I started off in the school system and trying to address sexual abuse and whatnot in schools. And then, of course, with my athletic background, people from sports started calling me and saying, you know, it's sort of like, you know, the same scenario, right? I'm being abused within my sport. And unlike schools that have, like, they have civil rights and they have general counsel positions and they have, you know, sophisticated players who don't always get it right, but at least, like, there is something there that I can hang my hat on as an attorney to get help for this victim, as opposed to when you go to club sports and there was nothing there. There's no general counsel. There's no insurance. There's no assets to go after. There's no, you know, the national governing bodies were saying, it's not our job. We don't do that. We don't educate parents. So we made some minor changes, but what really got everybody off their chairs, frankly, were all the victims of the Larry Nassar, the gymnast, mm-hmm. came forward, and it really put the change in hyperdrive.
Yeah, and even before that, because I remember when you talked to me, a very fine, actually, she's lived in Florida quite a bit, trained in Florida, Diana Nyad, a distance swimmer, just extraordinary. And I remember when you were talking to her and when she came out and said that she was sexually abused by this famous Jack Nelson, I believe, the coach down in Fort Lauderdale. And, you know, here is Diana Nyad, this incredibly strong, you know, endurance swimmer, just kind of in a separate category of human. And also, I imagine you've been so busy lately, you haven't had much time to be watching the Olympics. And they've had, you know, not just following the Winter Olympics, but occasionally they have these, you know, promos where they're showing Olympic events, period. And, you know, when I'm seeing the women gymnastics, Simone Biles and Ellie Reisman and some of those, they come on, I find that there's just a real pain deep in my heart for those athletes, what they suffered.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah. Well, actually, so here's the gift I think that they gave to everybody. So, you know, we're right in the middle of the Me Too movement, right? Mm-hmm. And so we had, I think the Me Too movement showed everybody that, you know, it's not just one or two women who have experienced sexual harassment and sexual abuse in the workforce and, you know, in their lives, right? Mm-hmm. That just because somebody doesn't tell you their inner stories doesn't mean that it's not part of everyday women's lives. But what these victims did is, we've never had anything like having 7 days of 150 women each sharing their story and directing it to their perpetrator. There's just never been anything like it, to have it be live streamed, to have everybody be able to watch it. And what the takeaway from that was, wow, not only is it ubiquitous, but it's also so damaging that before the trial, there was sort of a worldview of, well, you know, this sort of wasn't really a big deal. Like, well, you know, he sexually assaulted lots of women. But, you know, he put his fingers inside their vagina, you know, okay. But afterwards, nobody thought that. People were like, this is a monster. This is horrific. And sort of then step three is after you recognize how common it is and then you recognize how harmful it is we've got to do something about it to make sure it doesn't happen again.
Yeah, I was following that. I was following those testimonies, and they were just gut-wrenching.
Right.
I brought some on the show because I really wanted the listeners to hear. And I kudos to the strength of those women. They not only showed their strength and courage, you know, in Olympic performances, you know, on the balance beam or whatever, but the courage it took for them. Because so many of these were assaulted when they were 10, 12, 14 years of age. And to have realized what was happening, and then to put that together in their minds, you know, that it was just amazing. But I remember one particular girl, I think her name was Wessler, very close to that, and she really nailed it, that she said it not only was Larry Nassar, and we thought he was our friend, you know, he was the one that, you know, they were always under weight problems, etc., so he would sneak in sweets and stuff for them, and he obviously was very solicitous of them, but I thought it was very fascinating when she said that actually the whole environment, the whole structure with the coaches and with the isolation, you know, and the rigidity of that training and the intensity, that actually the whole system, it wasn't just a Nassar, but it was a system right. that kind of allowed this to happen.
Right. It was a way to build up athletes based on cruelty. And, you know, the people who did it the first, that were the first to speak out, really got maligned, and they got excommunicated from their own gymnastics community. Jennifer Say wrote a book called Chalked Up. And then Dominique Marciano, Olympic gold medalist when she was only 14 years old, wrote another book. And both of them were, right, they were like, no, not only did nobody want to listen to them, but they were like, how dare you say bad things about our sport of gymnastics? Well, you know, now everybody knows that that's true, that it really was a system based on cruelty. And it was the cruelty that allowed him to be nice, to violate every child protection measure that every child protection expert out there will tell you, you know, basic things on how to prevent girls from being, and boys, but how to prevent kids from being abused. And, you know, he gave them gifts, as you just said, right? He gave them candy because they were literally starving.
Mm-hmm.
Two is, he was friends with them on social media, and he was in contact with them, and it was able to kind of build this rapport with them on social media. Third is he was allowed to be alone with them. Right. Every child protection entity will tell you that's a big no-no. And then not only that, but he was able to perform medical procedures on them alone with them in their rooms. So even just basic child protection measures would have prevented a Larry Nassar.
Yeah, and Rachel Denhollander, who was also, now she's a young attorney, and I just found some of her testimony and some of her writing just gripping, and I thought one of the saddest things, when she was saying, you know, that when she was first assaulted, that her mother was in the room with her, but he so cleverly positioned himself, and that she thought, well, is this okay? If my mom is there, it must be okay. But the problem she had working through then, her relationship and her mother didn't realize, but now she has a little two-year-old girl. And I was so sad when she said, she's really good. I can see already she does all these little twists and turns, and she's got all kinds of natural abilities for gymnastics. And I really am not going to allow her to go into gymnastics. And,
yeah.
and you know, that kind of a condemnation and the hesitancy, and it never dawned on me, and I think one of the things that you really pointed out so forcefully is that, you know, particularly Olympic, you know, top level athletes are kind of in their own separate scale. They aren't students, though. They aren't employees. And so you just assumed that they had, you know, sexual abuse, you know, protocols and procedures that would be, you know, really rigorously followed and really carefully set up, because surely, you know, there's a lot of intimacy in a sport like that. You know, they position them, they catch them. And to find out there weren't any policies in place.
Yeah, I actually, well, first of all, before I get on to the policies, I just can't let the opportunity slide without giving a shout out to Rachel Denhollander.
Oh, yes, yes.
She's being honored today by her state. There, she's being called out. I'm choking up now, but yeah, she's being called out by the legislature and being honored, and you know, she really did so much to be the first brave person to come forward And I don't know if you know, but she's pregnant right now.
Yes, so I know that.
Yeah, yeah. She's almost 5 months. So she did all this, going to the trial and everything else, being in her first trimester. And you know, that's not where I want to be, my first trimesters. Anyway, I just have to give a huge shout-out to her, who, but for her, I just don't know where the whole country would be with, you know, we now have this statute that got passed with 8 million kids who are now being protected. Okay, so thank you for letting me talk about Rachel Den Hollander.
Oh, she deserves it.
So much respect for her. But moving on, I wrote a lot of policies for the United States Olympic Committee and encouraged them to adopt them, and was largely unsuccessful. I was successful in 2012 in getting a rule passed that said that all national governing bodies had to prohibit romantic and sexual relationships between coaches and their athletes, regardless of age or consent. So even a 25-year-old athlete is still protected under those rules. Okay, so they had to prohibit it, and they had to have a process for getting them out. But then, like, the issue of, then how do you get that message down? How do you push it down? You know, there's constantly, I'm sure you hear this on your radio all the time, about sort of what the elite doctors know, and how do you get it down to the general practitioners, right? Pushing it down was a whole other story, and basically the United States Olympic Committee did not want to do it. So I said, okay, if you're not going to protect athletes, then at least tell them that you're not going to protect them. Like, go to a swimming pool, you know, and it says, like, swim at your own risk, right? At least let them know that they don't have what they would expect at a school. There have not been background checks that have been done here, that there have not, there's no... that if you report sexual abuse to the United States Olympic Committee, that they will not do any. At least tell them that, right?
Yeah.
No, they wouldn't even tell them that.
Yeah, the testimony of those young women, I just found so, and actually a kind of related thing, but not the same. Some of the testimonies of the women against Roy Moore, the Supreme Court ex-justice, the pedophile in Georgia, you know, who was running for the Senate. I mean, there were just terrible similarities. And I think we've come to a new moment. And to me, it was really tragic because you have fought, and I can't think of the other gymnast that also complained a long, long time ago, and I believe she's also an attorney, and I just want to call her either Flowers or Armstrong, and I don't think it's either of those names.
She's a friend, Jessica Armstrong.
Yeah, it is Armstrong.
Jessica Armstrong, yeah. In 2012, Jessica Armstrong wrote beautiful new policy. She was abused by her coach, and they did a excellent story on her recently. But she was abused, and so she wrote these great policies. And then she got the world's greatest gymnast to all agree with her. They sent them off to USA Gymnastics and were ignored. They had very similar experiences to what I had with trying to work with swimming and with the Olympic Committee and other national governing bodies.
But a very important part of your bill that you worked so hard that just got signed February 15th is that I was very impressed. This very intelligent, very passionate, and obviously extremely courageous woman, the problem she had coming to terms with what happened to her and how long it took her to finally admit. And when her young daughter was going into gymnastics, finally she realized that she had to say something for the gym where she was. And it's that process, and I think it's a very important part of the bill, the new Safe Sports Act, is that there isn't this statute of limitations. In other words, you realize so much of this happens when their children are very young adults,
right,
and it takes a while to process what's happened to you.
Yeah, the average length of time it takes for a person to come forward from child sexual abuse is 21 years.
Wow.
And that's just, meanwhile, the perpetrators are out there still walking around. So let me just make sure for your listeners that everybody understands. There are two different parts of statute of limitations. One is the criminal statute of limitations, which the bill expands to 10 years. So you can still civilly sue your perpetrator for 10 years after it happened. So that's huge. Okay. The second part is the statute created a brand new entity called the United States Center for Safe Sport. And that entity is responsible within the Olympic movement for educating the members, for taking complaints, for conducting an investigation, and for holding a hearing, and then for, you know, getting the molester out. That process, everything I just said, is there's no statute of limitations. So if you have a coach that is that something bad happened, however long ago, you can still report it to this new Center for Safe Sport and get this coach off the decks. We're actually there's a famous coach that we're trying to get out right now. Along with Diana Nyad's coach, we're trying to get him out as well, out of the Hall of Fame and out of the sport, right? So even if because in my experience, who typically calls me are I usually get calls from women, sometimes men, but typically it's women. I mean, I run an organization called Champion Women,
and they're usually
they turn 40. Or B, they have a child that was the age that they were when they were abused. And they look at that child, and I think, you know, a lot of, like, you know, 10, 12, 14-year-olds, they think that they're so much smarter than they are at the time. And when you look at a 10, 12, 14-year-old, and you think, you know, I mean, I have 12-year-old girls and a 17-year-old son, and I think, man, are you ever dumb? I mean, they're all straight A students. They're very intellectually very smart and very precocious. But, you know, are they easily manipulated? Are they easily, you know, is it easy to, would it be easy to get them to go along with something? Absolutely. No matter how much good parenting I do, there's just a level of naivete and, frankly, just, you know, being so young. So anyway, when a victim sees, that's how sophisticated I was when I was 14. They look at their own kid, and then they have such empathy for what happened to them. Because one of the ways that perpetrators are able to keep doing it is that they make the person feel like they're part of it. Like either we're in love, and they're choosing it, and that they. That it's not painful and that it's not horrific, right? Because if it was, then they couldn't do it over and over and over again. So they get alcohol involved so mm-hmm. that they know that the parent, you know, if your parent knew that you were drinking alcohol, then you'd be in so much trouble. I can't tell. You know, stuff like that.
Yeah. They're very experienced. They know how to convince you you can't say anything because you're complicit or nothing bad is happening. But congratulations to you because the bill was just signed February 15th.
I can't believe it. We got both the House and the Senate. The Senate was unanimous. House only had 3 votes against it. And then the President of the United States, in the middle of having a problem with his own staff with domestic violence, still signed it into law. I mean, it's crazy that we were able to get this passed. And all credit to the victims who came forward, who really changed the national tone, the tenor of how we look at sexual assault, particularly childhood sexual assault. Because this protection has been needed for a long, long time. And it happened pretty quickly as soon as they came forward and started talking.
And Nancy Hogshead Maker, and this is who we've been talking to, just an extraordinary resource for this country in Florida. And Champion Women, she mentioned that is her organization. Probably an unfair question to you, but we all have been following Parkland. And I have been so impressed with the young people that are speaking out and really such articulate and angry words are really kind of nailing it. And what do you think about, what do you think we can do about the situation that happened in Parkland? Douglas.
I mean, let's just, again, you know, there's like a new listening for victims, right? Mm-hmm. We didn't listen to the Sandy Hook victims nearly as much as we are listening right now to the Parkland victims. And they're changing the national conversation about this. So, I mean, all hats off to them. These are crazy young kids. These are high school kids mm-hmm. that are leading 1,000-person marches that are, you know, you would have thought that they had, you know, expert training they've been doing this. They had their 10,000 hours under their belt of how it is that they're doing. So I really appreciate what it is that they're doing. As far as gun control, I'm sort of on the side of the children that there's just no reason for somebody to have an AK-47. That you can still have the right to bear arms, and you can still protect yourself in your own home, and you can still have fun hunting, and you can still have that bonding experience, and you can do all that and not have an AK-47. So, if we don't allow tanks, we don't allow people to own tanks, then why can't we, why can't you just draw the line a different place?
Yeah, the kids are really making common sense, which unfortunately our politicians don't seem to want to do that. But anyway, Nancy Hogshead Maker, thank you so much for all you're doing, you have done, and giving us this time today. I know how busy you are, and congratulations on passing the Safe Sport Act. Tremendous accomplishment.
Thank you, Mary. And again, privilege to be on.
You take care. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye.
And really pretty extraordinary woman. And so I'm going to put this music back on, and then I'm going to be coming back with our next guest. So let's just put this on, and we'll come back.
Maybe it's the real crooks, maybe it's the drugs, maybe it's the parents, maybe it's the colors everybody's wearing. Maybe it's the president, maybe it's the last one, maybe it's the one before that, what he done. Maybe it's the high schools, maybe it's the teachers, maybe it's the tattooed children in the bleachers. Maybe it's the Bible, maybe it's the lack, maybe it's the music, maybe it's the crack. Maybe it's the hairdos, maybe it's the TV, maybe it's the cigarettes, maybe it's the family, maybe it's the fast food, maybe it's the news, maybe it's divorce, maybe it's abuse, maybe it's the lawyers, maybe it's the prisons, maybe it's the senators, maybe it's the system, maybe it's the fathers, maybe it's the sons, maybe it's the sisters, maybe it's the moms.
Well, I'm going to pod this down because we know Cheryl Wheeler, what she's going to say. If we're up to her, she'd take away the guns. Well, I am very excited because with us on the phone, we have Mike Malley. And Mike, do I pronounce your last name Malley or what?
Males.
Okay. And he is a senior researcher, actually, with the Center for Juvenile and Criminal Justice. And he has written some pretty extraordinary articles, and their website is pretty phenomenal. And so, Mike Males, welcome so much to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Well, if you don't mind, I am going to play this because I think one of the things, I spent quite a bit of time on your website and going through some of the things you're writing about, because I think it's so important that we have been wrestling with this problem of gun control and essentially the massacres in schools for several years, and nothing seems to be getting done. And we have the same old arguments that, guns don't kill people, it's people that kill with the guns, so to speak. But I think with Marjorie Stoneham Douglas and with Parkland, we have seen students' voices and articulation. And I know so much of your work, actually, you are really pointing out the bad rap that young people are getting, in the sense of their violence and their gun ownership, etc. And I'd like to play this by Emma Gonzalez because she was really attacked by some people in the legislature. And I thought some of the things she said were so courageous that I think we need to listen to some of the young people. So if it's okay, I'm going to play this by Emma, and then we will come back and talk about it.
We are going to be the kids that you read about in textbooks. Not because we are going to be another statistic about mass shootings in America, but because, just as David said, we are going to be the last mass shooting. Just like Tinker v. Des Moines, we are going to change the law. That's going to be Marjorie Stoneman Douglas in that textbook, and it's all going to be due to the tireless effort of the school board, the faculty members, the family members, and most importantly, the students. The students. The students. the students still in the hospital, the students who are now suffering from PTSD, the students who had panic attacks during the vigil because the helicopters who wouldn't leave us alone, hovering over the school 24 hours a day. There has been one tweet that I would like to call attention to. So many signs that the Florida shooter was mentally disturbed, even expelled for bad and erratic behavior. Neighbors and classmates knew he was a big problem, must always report such instances to authorities again and again. We did, time and time again. Since he was in middle school, it was no surprise to anyone who knew him to hear that he was the shooter. Those talking about how we should have not ostracized him, you didn't know this kid! Okay, we did! We know that they're claiming that there are mental health issues, and I am not a psychologist, but we need to pay attention to the fact that this isn't just a mental health issue. He wouldn't have harmed that many students with a knife! We stop blaming the victims for something that was the shooter's fault. The fault of the people who let him buy the guns in the first place. Those at the gun shows, the people who encouraged him to buy accessories for his guns to make them fully automatic. The people who didn't take them away from him when they knew that he expressed homicidal tendencies, and I am not talking about the FBI. I am talking about the people that he lived with. I'm talking about the neighbors who saw him outside holding guns. If the president wants to come up to me and tell me to my face that it was a terrible tragedy and how it should never have happened and maintain telling us how nothing is going to be done about it, I'm going to happily ask him how much money he received from the National Rifle Association. Being $5,800. Is that how much these people are worth to you, Trump? If you don't do anything to prevent this from continuing to occur, that number of gunshot victims will go up and the number that they are worth will go down. And we will be worthless to you. To every politician who is taking donations from the NRA, shame on you. And if you answered us, will you act like it for once? You know what would be a good way to act like it? I have an example of how not to act like it. In February of 2017, 1 year ago, President Trump repealed an Obama-era regulation that would have made it easier to block the sale of firearms to people with certain mental illnesses. From the interactions that I had had with the shooter, before the shooting and the information that I currently know about him, I don't really know if he was mentally ill, but I wrote this before I heard what Delaney said. Delaney said that he was diagnosed. I don't need a psychologist, and I don't need to be a psychologist to know that repealing that regulation was a really dumb idea. Yeah. Republican Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa was the sole co-sponsor on this bill that stops the FBI from performing background checks on people adjudicated to be mentally ill. And now he's stating for the record, well, it's a shame that the FBI isn't doing background checks on these mentally ill people. Well, duh, you took that opportunity away last year. Government who were voted into power are lying to us, and us kids seem to be the only ones who notice and are prepared to call BS. Companies trying to make caricatures of the teenagers nowadays, saying that all we are is self-involved and trend-obsessed, and they hush us into submissions when our message doesn't reach the ears of the nation. We are prepared to call BS. Politicians who sit in their gilded House and Senate seats funded by the NRA telling us nothing could have ever been done to prevent this. We call BS. We say that they say that tougher gun laws do not decrease gun violence. We call BS. They say a good guy with a gun stops a bad guy with a gun. We call BS. They say guns are just tools like knives and are as dangerous as cars. We call BS. No, they say that no laws could have been able to prevent the hundreds of senseless tragedies that have occurred. We call BS. That us kids don't know what we're talking about, that we're too young to understand how the government works. We call BS. If you agree, register to vote. Contact your local congresspeople. Give them a piece of your mind.
Wow. Mike Mails, I found listening to some of the students from Parkland and also other right here in our area, et cetera, I think we should start listening to the young people a lot more, don't you?
Well, yes, and what Emma Gonzalez is raising there, and I think this student movement, which I'm delighted to see, has the potential to raise, is a whole new dimension of the gun violence argument that's been frozen. When she referred to Tinker v. Des Moines, that was a Supreme Court decision back in 1965 that legalized free speech for students in schools. It was an important student right, and now I think the student right to have an impact on the gun violence debate is very important. But one of the things that has to be done, this is one of the big obstacles, is students have to overcome and not contribute to the image among both sides in the gun debate that America's youth divide into two kinds of young people. One, the deranged school shooter, the troubled young man. Second, the victimized student who was terrified to go to school. I think they have to overcome that. And I think one of the ways to do that is not simply to raise new issues, but to point out that their generation, the younger generation in this country, has already demonstrated the ability to bring down gun violence dramatically, more than any other age group over the last 25 years, even against all the obstacles that grown-ups are throwing up against them. And I think the student movement needs to be invigorated by its ability to make gun violence irrelevant in this country by their own actions. And they need to celebrate that and point that out to the adults who have not done so well in reducing gun violence.
Well, you know, I think that was, I read your article and I was so impressed because frankly, we have seen far too much of this. I mean, something like 18 since just the beginning of this year with schools, et cetera. And I was looking, you know, for any glimmer of hope because I thought we've got to be looking at this differently. And I was really stunned at your article when you were pointing out that, you know, in states, in New York and California, well, that's not so surprising that the gun violence has gone down so much. They have very strict laws, etc. But I was impressed of how much it's gone down with the youth in those areas because, you know, we think of all the immigrants. We hear all the time about MS-13 and the wall and, you know, how dangerous they are, etc. But there you're saying that the incidence of gun violence, homicide violence in the young in these areas has gone down just 80% and 90%. But also what was so surprising, Texas. Texas doesn't have the kind of gun control and the laws that they do in California and New York. And so quite obviously, as you just said, that the young people are getting it. And why do you think that they are so turning against the having guns and actually homicide among themselves?
Well, one of the problems is this has not been studied. And on a national basis, Since 1995, we have seen a 54% decline in gun murder rates among high school age students. I'm talking 12 to 18 here. And to the point that high school age students, and I know this is going to sound like blasphemy given the recent school shooting, the tragedy in Parkland, but high school students, middle school and high school students are actually much safer from being murdered by a gun today than the general population is. And that's not because schools are tremendously safe. It's because, although they are safer than other institutions, it's because the rest of America has such a high rate of shootings that go on every day, including mass shooting, including shootings in families, shootings in workplaces. We can't simply make this a problem of schools because we're not going to deal with the school shooting problem in isolation. It's part of a larger nexus of American shootings that occur in all kinds of locations, even churches. So I think young people have been more successful in bringing down their rates of gun violence, and we're really looking at dramatic drops. Florida is actually has a dramatic drop in gun killings among youth, not as much as California, New York, and Texas, but still fairly impressive. And, of course, it takes one mass shooting to make things look terrible, but actually the overall trend is very optimistic if we grown-ups would get the message on this. And one of the reasons I think this occurred, and it has not been studied, that's to our detriment as gun control and gun rights lobbies have not studied these declines. But one of the things that we can see rather dramatically is a decline in gun ownership among younger ages. And also this networking that goes on through global interconnections, and the Internet is a big part of this, has enabled younger people to connect in ways that previous generations could not, and adults today still have trouble doing. And I think a lot of this has produced the size of these rallies, the vehemence of these rallies, and the enthusiasm that you see, and the numbers that we simply didn't have. And it also has an impact on social problems like shooting. So I think we're seeing a new kind of revolution among younger people today that we really don't understand. It doesn't look like the way we would have handled things. But the big danger, of course, is that we're going to slip into the easy remedy. Just raise the age of gun purchase. Just put more cops. Just arm more teachers in schools. Just have mental health regimes that target the misfits so we can, you know, corral thousands of kids and make them even more alienated without really doing much about the one in hundreds of thousands that's going to shoot up a school. So...
Well, you know, when I was reading, you know, what you were writing, and so much of it is, we tend to think, you know, that the young people, particularly the kids in the streets of Los Angeles or Chicago, you know, that they're going to have a gun or they're going to have access to a gun. And it's almost as if we're dominated by fear, and maybe because we have lived with all of this war and all of these weapons of mass destruction and kind of the sense of terrorists, that we've kind of, as adults, and I think when I read you, I became so aware, I thought, wait a minute, we're not aware that the young people in this country are actually seeing things differently. And I've been aware, you know, following the opioid epidemics, et cetera, that this isn't an epidemic of serious problem with young people and kids. It's of middle-aged adults. And so I think you bring up an important point that they are so much into social media. And so often as adults, we say, oh, that's all they think about, et cetera. But actually, there is an interconnection at a very human level that even though it's very different, it must be having quite an effect.
It's having a dramatic effect. And most students, again, there will be exceptions, but most young people use social media very productively. And where they use it to organize politically and where they use it to get help for problems and where they use it to organize against things like gun violence or for gay rights, if you're interested in the other side of the thing, or women's marches, which are heavily patronized, or I should say, I guess, matronized by young millennial women, where they use the social media productively, it's amazing. And the result, like you say, when you look at cities like Los Angeles, where I grew up, or New York City, you think, wow, these have some grim areas, and this must be full of menacing kids with guns and shootings. The number of youth arrested in Los Angeles, city of Los Angeles last year for murder, was six in a city of 4 million people, down from over 200 25 years ago. That's the image people have, is 25 years ago. It's out of date. Kids are not like that today. Gun killings have dropped by 90% among young people in New York City and Los Angeles. And there's been some impressive drops in Miami as well. And we're just completely ignoring these positive trends that occurred, even in places like Texas, where they have open carry gun laws and things like that. It's not just Los Angeles and New York and gun control centers, but places like Texas, like Dallas, like San Antonio, like El Paso. It's amazing these changes that have occurred. And I think young people need to bring this to the fore and say, look, we have demonstrated, our generation, that we can bring down gun violence dramatically while you grown-ups are doing practically nothing except making things worse.
And why, you know, again, I'm we're talking to Mike Mails, and he is a senior research senior researcher for the Center for Juvenile and Criminal Justice. You know, again, with California and New York, you know, we tend to think, you know, the first and the fifth states being have the strongest gun controls and gun ownership, et cetera. But Texas, you know, which is open carry. And when you're looking at these statistics, and probably it's not fair to ask you, because if the research isn't being done, you probably don't really have the answers. But is it at the local level? I mean, do these kids get it that it isn't cool necessarily to own a, you know, an AR-15, and you're not going to bring it to school, the vast majority? And maybe a kid like Nicholas Cruz kind of reflects more our adult fears, if you will, and our reaction than the two that can be terribly destructive, you know, protecting ourselves or whatever. Maybe he reflects more us and not so much the young people that you're really dealing with statistically.
I think that's absolutely right. And I think that, again, unfortunately, we have to speculate on a lot of these trends that we academics, we researchers, we members of government agencies should have been on top of now for 10 or 15 years is why these trends are occurring. But if you're a kid growing up in the inner part of Los Angeles, the inner part of New York City, the inner part of Dallas, have seen and heard about gun violence that menaced the generation that came before you. I mean, horrifically menaced. We used to have hundreds and hundreds of shootings, deadly shootings in these cities. And I think young people have seen that reality, heard about that reality, know that it menaces them personally, and they have acted on their own individually. And again, through social media, to bring down a lot of the attitudes that that created these problems. And when you say the shooter in the Marjory Stoneman School was reflecting very much the kinds of frustrations and fears that we still see plaguing, again, it's not a large number of individuals, but given the weaponry available, it doesn't have to be a large number to create a lot of mayhem in schools, workplaces, theaters, churches, homes, and everywhere. Yes, I think that we are looking too much at the individual exception among young people and characterizing a whole generation by a very small number of people who are not adapting well to the modern age. So I think that we need to step back and take a whole new perspective on that, and the student movement is offering a chance to do that. And I'd like to see them move forward and really start pointing the fingers at grown-ups on all sides of this and say, you have all failed us.
Well, obviously we have, because honestly, I think I'm pretty well read, et cetera, but I have the impression that are certain areas, maybe in our city, in this state, and in Chicago, and areas like that, that are so dangerous that people don't dare sit in their porches at night. And, you know, there are these drive-by shootings, and a child will be hit, you know, in her living room, et cetera. And yet the statistics show that that isn't actually the case. And I, to me, this is revelatory, because if we can't take this horrible fear, not just of the gun, but the other having the gun, then obviously we're not going to make much progress.
Well, I don't want to be Pollyanna. I mean, there are areas of cities and also some rural areas, although actually cities now, young people in cities are actually becoming safer from gun violence than young people who don't live in cities, which is another remarkable trend. But yeah, there are areas of cities where gun violence remains high. It's nothing like it was 25 years ago, but that's no consolation to someone who happens to get shot in 2018. But yes, there are areas that remain dangerous, and this is another area where grown-ups have failed young people. We fail to address poverty and the high rates of poverty among American youth that do not exist among youth in other Western countries. And poverty is a generator of a great deal of violence for a number of very, unfortunately, irrational reasons. So there's a whole gamut from family violence to poverty to the failure of adults to enact reasonable laws. All of these things, and also the failure of adults to study and understand the circumstances under which gun violence comes down among young people, because it's happened. We could study that. We could learn from it. But we refuse to, because we're so caught up in this debate of trying to make schools sound like they're just denizens of shooters and victims, and young people are just menacing and menaced, and this whole stereotype that we got to get rid of. And I hope the student movement will look at these larger issues and bring about real change.
Well, and Mike, I'm thinking too, it's our fault because we give undue credence to power, to guns. I mean, we solve problems with war. We develop terrible weapons of mass destruction. So in a way, we also, you know, have undue reverence for the power of a gun, one way or another, to solve or create a problem.
Exactly. We seem stuck. And I don't think we grown-ups have to be this way. But we seem stuck in debates that go on for decades, even though they're futile, repeating the same points over and over. I call it like a Greek tragedy, where everybody repeats their lines and we move toward inevitable doom. But grown-ups don't have to be this way. We don't have to keep saying, well, if somebody has a AR-15 that can fire 30 rounds, then we have to have one that fires 60 rounds, or we don't feel safe, or 200 rounds. I'm really wondering when we're going to start hearing that individual households need rocket launchers or atomic bombs to protect themselves. I just think that this debate has gotten so nutty. And when I hear Emma Gonzalez, she raises her voice, she gets mad, but she makes a lot of sense on this.
Does she?
I want to see them move forward with some accurate facts about how their generation has improved the gun violence problem in this country dramatically without any help from adults, or maybe with help from some adults. But still, they deserve a lot of credit for that, and they need to start stepping out and getting rid of this image that they're all just a bunch of dangerous people on one hand or endangered children on the other. That's not true.
Well, Mike Malice, Mels, thank you so much for giving us this time today. We're running out of time, and keep up your great work. And I'm going to be following what you're doing because I think we absolutely have to get into this. So thank you so much for giving us this time.
Hey, thank you.
Bye-bye. Arlene, go ahead.
And we've had a request from one listener wondering if there's a way to get in touch with the kids up at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School to let them know how much we support them and how much we appreciate what they're doing. I'm not sure of any way right now, but I'm going to look into that, and I will post something on our Facebook page as soon as I can find a way. I'm also wondering if there's an organization that is being formed as part of this. So that's important.
This won't be the only time we cover this.
I know. And on a different subject, but one that we've covered frequently, fracking. This is it for sending information to the state Senate. Please call Senator Bradley today and urge him to bring the bill to a vote in its final committee. That phone number for Senator Bradley is 866-582-4813. 866-582-4813. And WMNF is going to be having Wine on the Air. And tomorrow night, February 23rd, from 7 to 9 p.m. at Vintage Wine Cellars, 3629 Henderson Boulevard, WMNF and Vintage Wine Cellars will be hosting a special fun-filled fundraiser for WMNF. For reservations, you can call 813-879-2931. The cost is $25 per person.
And you have been listening to WMNF Tampa, Sarasota, Clearwater, Community Conscious Radio. Just keep it tuned here all day, people. Let's make it a better world.